So if you're there in Daniel 7, I'll just give you a real quick recap. The book of Daniel, we're in this study, in this series that we're going through, we're breaking up into three sections. The first one is Daniel's seizure. This is where he was taken captive there in Judah, and he was taken to the Babylonian Empire against his will, of course. And if you remember, I just want to share with you guys, this is my belief. You can wrestle this out. I believe he was made to be a eunuch. And so as a young man, I think there were some radical changes, some really harsh treatment that he went through. And yet, all along the way that we've been studying Daniel and his life, we see him with this amazing ability to just balance things out, to kind of center things. And whatever situation life that he's dealing with, it, which is thrown at him, he just kind of balances right in there. What is it that I need to do to be pleasing to God? What is it that I need to do to be the most useful vessel in God's hand? I remember we had a youth pastor, a junior high youth pastor at Calvary Chapel La Mirada, and I remember he went to Chuck Smith, and he was talking to him after a service one time, Chuck Smith's now gone on to be with the Lord, but he's a man of faith, like Wayne, has been in the ministry for decades. And so, like, when those people speak, you listen. You keep your mouth shut. And so when he went up to Pastor Chuck and he said, "Hey, is there anything, any advice that you'd give me after all the years in the ministry you've been in?" And Pastor Chuck said, "My prayer," I think he said, "What can I pray for you about?" And Pastor Chuck said, "Just pray that I'd be useful." And if you know this man who's been in the Word for such a long period of time, you know, has such a command of the Word of God and teaches and is just absolutely solid, you think, what do you mean useful? Of course you're going to be useful. But it's a heart's attitude, you know? And Daniel kind of, he had that heart's attitude. I just want to be useful for God. I think that we think that only these certain people can be useful to God. Or if my range is not big enough, it's not worth the effort. And yet God will entrust souls to us, whether it's one at a time or many at a time. He's going to entrust souls to us, and we want to be useful. So the book of Daniel has really presented itself in a way that we can apply. Who does God want me to be? And how can I best manage life situations? And they are adverse. Daniel, the book of Daniel, is true for you, and it's true for me, because life stinks. And life is hard, and you go through tough times. And maybe when you're younger, you don't know it as much. You know a little bit, you know, depending on what kind of a life you've lived. But as you get older and tougher times hit, and there's more illnesses, and there's more trials, and you go through more issues at work, and you get laid off, even though you've been working hard, you go through these situations, people backstab you, and at a certain point, you realize, It's just me. It's an audience of one. That's where we have got to come to that realization. It's really all about the Lord. And how can I be most useful? And how can I do things rightly? Not to be pleasing to any one person, or to be impacted or directed or influenced by any particular person or group, but solely the Lord. And that's what Daniel really captures for us, at least in the first six chapters, because it's really been such a history lesson for us. So that's the first part, Daniel chapter 1. And as a young man and as an older man, he just continues to lay it out before the Lord. Then we get into chapters 2 through 6. We go from Daniel's seizure to Daniel's service. And we see over and over and over that we go from his private challenge as an individual in chapter 1 to his political career. We see his personal life really coming up, and how God used him, and God used him mightily. I'm not going to go through, for the sake of time, I'd like to go through every one of those chapters and give you a real quick recap. I know I've gone through five of them already in an introduction, but over and over and over, you've got the boys that were taken captive, the Hebrew boys, and chapter 1, Daniel being one of them. You've got, I am going to recap this, okay? But very, very quickly. Not with all the details that I have. I like to teach. Forgive me. And then chapter 2, the king had a dream. Daniel came in, and nobody else could do it. And he came in. And they were going to kill everybody, and he came in and saved a bunch of people. A lot of good stuff in that chapter 2. Daniel 3, Daniel's kind of removed, and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they step in, and they won't worship this golden image that Nebuchadnezzar had laid down, so they threw them into the fiery furnace, and they're alive. And there's a fourth that's joining with them, and they're walking around talking. They come out. They don't smell like fire. Nothing is singed or anything, and Nebuchadnezzar's humbled, right? Then chapter 4 comes in, and Nebuchadnezzar had all this pride. God humbled him, right? He became like a beast. We're going to see some of that overflow into this chapter we're going to study today. And then chapter 5 was the party of a century. And Nebuchadnezzar's great-grandson, or grandson, I should say, Belshazzar, through this great party, took the vessels, these worship vessels, and began drinking and partying, and really it was an orgy. That's exactly what was going on. And at that time, then the Medo-Persians came in and conquered him, and he died that night. And then last week we finished up our study through Daniel 6, which is the lion's den, one of the most famous, you know, Bible studies, especially for children. And Daniel wouldn't cave in his thing, worshiping only Darius, and so he was thrown into the lion's den, and God ministered there and saved him. And so we now come into chapter 7 through 12. This is the final section, the third section, and this is Daniel's sensitivity. There was something happening in Daniel's life that he was sensitive. We read in the book of Romans, chapter 2, that the believers have their hearts circumcised. Now listen, I'm not trying to be gross or funny, but you guys understand circumcision is the cutting away of the flesh. Well, that act of circumcision, God says, I'm going to do that in the heart of my children. I'm going to take the hardness, the fleshy, the things that would keep them from being sensitive to me, and I'm going to carve those areas off. And so we, in that sanctification process, God continues to kind of carve our hearts and takes away those areas so we can be sensitive to him. Are you guys with me? So important you'd understand that, because we should be gaining our sensitivity, not losing our sensitivity. Sin will take away the sensitivity. If you've ever lived, you know, through a time where you're like, I don't feel like fighting anymore, I'm just going to go ahead and sin, you chisel away. You put the flesh back on, and you miss the sensitivity. We need to be listening. We need to be attentive to God's voice. And so chapter 7 is about how Daniel handles his vocation. He's a prophet, and he's going to prophesy. And God works powerfully. There's a lot in here, and so I'm going to ask Dan. Not yet, but show the picture. I'll let you know when I want that picture, because I'm going to kind of show. I don't know how good the picture is going to be, but we're going to see Daniel 2 and Daniel 7. They're almost identical, but there's a lot more detail in Daniel chapter 7. So it's a history. Chapter 7 is about the four kingdoms, the four beasts. And so we're gonna look at that. It's gonna elaborate there in chapter 8. But this is what verses 1 through 4 is about, or 14. The four beasts. This is where the vision was imparted. So, and we see it in chapter 7, verse 1. Daniel's timing is important. It says this. Listen to the timing on this. Daniel chapter 7, verse 1. It says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. Some real quick points, but some really good application. We're going to get into history. We're going to get into facts. But there's some things that Daniel's doing that I don't want to jump into those verses quite yet. I want to make sure that we're pulling those, extracting those. What does Daniel do? Why is he so sensitive? How is he doing things? How does he handle this vocation of being a prophet? By the way, what is your spiritual gift or gifts? It should be gifts. What are your spiritual gifts? And are you sensitive to God? Are you being used by God with those gifts? Because you should be. So we see that in the very beginning of this chapter, it says, in the first year, do you see this, of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. This is going back between chapters 4 and 5. Belshazzar was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, right? So really, we've been going forward and forward. We began when he was a teenager. We end chapter 6 where he's like in his 85, 90 year range, right around there. And now we're jumping back. I just want you to understand, because we've gone through a history lesson. Now we're going into prophecy, but we're seeing that this is going back in time now from where we were at to when Belshazzar was king of Babylon. And it said that Daniel had a dream. And listen, can you imagine this? I just want you to picture this. He's there, he's asleep, and he's dreaming. I don't dream a whole lot, but when I dream, I usually come up waking up and asking, Lord, was that from you or not? That's one of the best things I can do when I start to have a dream. Is it, you know, if you get that, you know, unction of the spirit. So it says, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed, and then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. He wrote it down. when you wake up at night, I don't know that you do this, but I have a tendency, if I wake up and if I don't write things down, and I do not have an end table, I don't have a pad of paper and a pen, I sometimes forget. And the next morning, I'm kind of kicking myself that I didn't get up and write these things down. But this was a movement of God. God was revealing things, and there was absolutely no way that he was going to let this opportunity pass. I want to encourage you because I think there's a good example. Sometimes we come to life, we come to situations in Scripture, and we might call these things best practices. Like, what's the best practice? How do you handle when you have a dream and you're having visions? Write it down. Write it down because you get the details when they're fresh. Are you guys with me? You don't want to miss that. When Monica and I got engaged, there was something where God clearly moved. And I've shared it as an illustration. For the sake of time, I'm not going to share it. But I mean, there was like rain and then no rain and no clouds. And the ground was just about dry. I mean, it was like clearly God was directing us. And I think I needed that, right? So I've written it down in sermons. You have a tendency to remember things. Why should you take notes when you're in a Bible study like this? Even if you throw them away later, because you're more likely to remember when you write them down. And so he writes it down. And I want to encourage you, when God gives you a vision or a dream or he gives you a word, unless he directly says, go share that right now, write it down. Take time to listen to God and write down the details. Now, listen, he's going to go in now and he's going to start explaining what he was seeing in this vision while he was dreaming. But I want you to understand this. Daniel 2 is like the exact sister passage. And I'll share with you this and you'll see in just a minute. But Daniel 2, Daniel lays out the four world empires, the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, the Greek, and the Roman. And then there's one that's going to emerge, and that's going to be Jesus Christ, and we're going to get into that more too, the fifth being that of Christ. Daniel 7 is going to come in with more detail on these world governments. We're going to see this. So we go from Daniel's timing to Daniel's seeing, what he's seeing in verses 2 through 8. Look at verse 2. It says, Daniel spoke. He wrote these things down. Now it says, now he's speaking. And he spoke, and he says, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. I think there's another good insight and application we need to draw out here. And I want to be fair to this, so you wrestle this out. You test this. But Daniel is now telling the vision that he had. I don't think that there was a lot of time that has passed between when he was given it, when he wrote it, and when he shared it, that in particular. But I want to encourage you in this, that if God gives you a vision, church, listen, if you have a dream, and I know several of you have dreams. Some people are more prone to that. Some people have visions. Or if God gives you a word, you know what you do? You hold on to it. Unless God, listen, church, listen, unless God is telling you right now, go tell that person, hold on to it. Okay? Daniel was writing it down and he shared it immediately because God told him, go and share this. But I want to encourage you because what it allows us to do is to pray through and to process the information that the Lord's giving to us. If you get a word, how many people, you don't have to raise your hand, but how many people would like a word from the Lord? You know, some people say, oh, Christianity is so boring. Have you ever been given a prophecy? Have you ever prophesied over somebody? Have you ever been given a dream about your life or about somebody else's life? Have you ever been given a word of wisdom about an individual? It is mind-blowing. Knowing something about somebody you don't know, or there's no way that you would know, and then sharing it with them, it's mind-blowing for you and for them. And you know, it's like, it's the weirdest thing because it's like, you know, in the water parks, I have to be really careful. I don't like going to the water parks, but my favorite thing to do, and we used to go down to Schlittermann a lot, is it's called a lazy river, right? You guys, anybody not understand lazy river? Lazy river is, there's a current, and it's not very wide necessarily, but you get rafts, and you gather with the family, you gather with the people you're with, and you get a raft, and you lift your feet. That's what you do. Or you drag it, right? You just drag it on the ground and you just kind of move. It's one of the funniest things. It's absolutely zero effort. You know, you just hang out, you know? Very cool. When the Lord is moving, it's like a lazy river. You just want to be like lifting your feet and you just go with the current. What does God want you to do? You just lift your feet and just move with him. And then you begin being used because you're pliable. You're useful for him. And so when he gives you a vision, when he gives you a dream, when he gives you a word, take time to pray through it, to process through it. Take the opportunity to realize what you've been given. You don't have to turn there, but I want you to at least memorize this. I think we can all memorize a verse real quickly. Memorize the location, 1 Thessalonians 5:21. 1 Thessalonians 5:21, it says this, test all things and hold fast to that which is good. Test all things and hold fast to that which is good. Really simple scripture, but man, is it a good word of exhortation. Test all things and hold fast to that which is good. When God gives you a vision or a dream or a word, you test it and you hold fast to that which is good. The word for test, it's dokimazo, and it means to examine or scrutinize to see whether a thing is genuine or not. They would do this with metals. Is this a genuine? And if there was any impurities, it would be driven up and they would remove it. That's a testing process. And so God is saying, when you get something, listen, God is not offended if you test the things that he gives you. He encourages it. Never ask you to check your brains off. So if you're given a vision or a dream or a word, you test it. You put it through the fire. You scrutinize it. You examine it. You investigate. And then if it's good, you hold on to it. But it says you hold fast to it. And that means to detain. To listen, this is really cool. This word kateko in the Greek, hold fast, it means to not go back from such a thing or an action, to possess it. In other words, when you're given this, you don't go back away from it. You go forward into it. Really, a pretty, pretty powerful word. And then you hold fast to that which is good. This is the Greek word kalos or kalos. And it means excellent, beautiful, precious, or magnificent. So the question is begged at this point. One, how do you test it? How do you know if something's beautiful or excellent or magnificent? We've got plenty of prophecy to get into, but there's some really good applications I don't want to miss that Daniel's doing that we need to understand. Listen, it should always follow a particular set of criteria. If you get a word, if you get a vision, if you get a dream, if you don't start praying for it, God will give it to you. Pray for those things, and then let it follow a particular set of criteria. First, it needs to capture and be consistent with the Lord's heart. This is the testing process. Is this consistent with the Lord's heart? Does God love every single human being on the face of the earth? Yes. That's a really good test, right? Is it consistent with his heart? Is Jesus a selfish? Does he encourage us to be selfish? No. So if it's selfish, then you know it's not from the Lord. Are you guys with me? Because sometimes we can hear things and it might be us or it might be something else. It might be someone else. But when it's the Lord, it's going to be consistent with his heart. The second thing, the second part of this particular criteria, this test, is that it needs to be seen in Christ's life or at least in the Gospels. That's a great second test. Do you see it in the Gospels? And then the third test is, do the apostles teach it in the rest of the New Testament? And if you see that it's following those three criteria, those tests, then you know this is from the Lord. If you're at all nervous, well, I don't know if this is from the Lord. Just real quick, is it capture the Lord's heart? Did we see it in the Gospels? Was it taught by the apostles? And if it follows all that, then man, you preach it and you go with it quickly and you go boldly and you could be confident and step out in faith. So what did Daniel share? Going back to our passage here, Daniel chapter 7, what did he share? He said, I saw a vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. There was a vision that came by night. What did he see? There were four winds of heaven, and there was a stirring of the great sea. The winds of heaven, it's where God is using the four winds of heaven to put humanity into toil. And then the great sea, it speaks of and refers to the Mediterranean Sea. But if you understand this culturally, in this culture, in the Near East, the symbolism would represent the mass of humanity. So listen, I want to share this with you. Listen, are you guys with me? Please take notes on this. If you're into taking notes mentally, this should be sufficient. But if you need to write it down, listen, when we get to the book of Revelation, chapter 13 and chapter 17, we're going to see the sea. Whenever you see the sea in Scripture, right, CEA, whenever you see the sea, the great sea, there's a reference to something. And you need to test it, put it through the test. Does this refer to humanity, the world? Because what we're going to see here, what we're going to see in Revelation chapter 13, what we're going to see in Revelation chapter 17, is that these four beasts are going to come out of the sea. Are you guys with me? So listen, these are those things. When you see the words in Scripture, you want to be thinking, this is what I should be identifying it as. If it's the sea, something that's coming out of the world. These beasts are coming out of the world. They're worldly. They're not supernatural. I'm going to take a tangent. Gosh, pray for me. I get through this. There's a lot of good stuff. I don't want you guys to miss these things. When we get down into verse 8 today, we will get there. If we have to stay for 3 hours. When we get there, what we're going to see is we're going to see the Antichrist come. And this Antichrist is going to be, listen, I don't want to give credit to the devil or his henchmen, okay? But I'm just telling you, when the Antichrist comes on the scene, he's going to be almost supernatural. He's going to be amazing. He is going to be an absolutely amazing orator. He is going to speak with like fluidity, eloquence. And people are going to go, how did you understand this? How did you know this? We're going to get into it this week, and we're going to go into elaborate next week. But I want you to understand, because every one of these beasts, including the Antichrist, is going to be coming out of the sea. It's humanity. It's a human being that's really, really, the Antichrist is a human that is filled with the spirit of Satan. That's about as good as I can get it. Now, we're going to get there. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I want you to understand this. So when we go to the book of Revelation, we have this as a backdrop to the book of Revelation. The sea talks about humanity, and that's where the nations are raging. So understand, man always goes into great instability when he follows other men rather than God. There's just you can't get out of it. So let me add something real quickly. If we live in kingdoms that are ruled by man rather than God, we're always going to experience the same thing. It's going to be the opposite with God, but it's also going to be making us unstable. We have to go with what God says. We have to live by what God says. As a nation, that's true, and for you as an individual. If you take your life and cookie cutter, well, I like this scripture, so I'm going to live this way. I don't like that scripture. I'm not going to live this way. You're not going to be stable. So, listen, we're going to be getting into this too. Daniel 2 is written from man's perspective, and we see the value of these metals and the strength of these metals. Daniel 7 is going to be from God's perspective, and he's going to explain these kingdoms as beasts. He's going to describe their grotesque features. So, again, they're coming out of the sea, out of the world. So why, real quickly, Dan, you could throw that if you want, throw that up there, that picture, and you guys can kind of observe that and hopefully glean a little bit. I don't know if you'd be able to, it didn't come out that good. I just pulled it off the internet, but it's a pretty good illustration. So why does God repeat himself? Why does he go in Daniel 2 and say something, and then he goes in Daniel 7 for something? One, we see man's perspective, God's perspective. But listen, it's a common way that God communicates. And one of the things that he does is he places emphasis when he repeats himself. He places emphasis when he repeats himself. He places emphasis when he repeats himself. He places emphasis when he does what? Yeah, you see, when you want somebody to understand something, you repeat. I do it with my kids. I do it with Faith all the time. Faith, don't do that. Don't do that, Faith. Don't do that, right? It should be quicker obedience, but, you know, we'll do it the best we can. God did it with Joseph, gave him two different dreams. Same scenario, same communication. The book of Revelation, we're going to see the seal and the trumpet judgments come in. But before the bowl judgments are mentioned, he's going to go in greater detail on those judgments. He explains it so that there's a greater understanding. So now we come to verse 4. Daniel's now going to begin describing the first beast. So look with me, and I'm going to read well, let me read 2, 3, and 4 here. It says, and so Daniel spoke, and he says, I saw a vision by night. Behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And the four beasts came from the sea, each different from the other. Verse 4 says this, the first was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings. I watched till all its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. I want you to understand this. I don't know that you get this totally, but that's Babylon, and that's Nebuchadnezzar. And we'll go into it a little bit, but the first beast comes in, and it looks like a lion with wings. It speaks of supreme royal authority, power, swiftness. We are in debt today for some of the mathematical, scientific, and other fields that were discovered, things that were discovered in the Babylonian. There are things we absolutely don't understand about the way they did things. And we're indebted to a lot of the things that we understand. If you were to go to Babylon, you'd see the gates of the royal palaces, and they're guarded by lions with wings. today. Still, I thought I read something, 150 different lions with wings that are guarding. It's kind of interesting. Now, listen, I want you to understand this too. So this is a little tangent, but it helps us understand the book of Daniel, helps us, especially in the area of prophecy, helps us understand the book of Revelation. These men that are writing, we're talking about thousands of years ago, right? John about 2,000, and I think he's another 1,000 on top of that, about 3,000 years ago, okay? So Daniel is writing from his perspective, with his vernacular, with his language, with his understanding, and he's limited. He wouldn't understand electricity, right? So he couldn't describe that. If he were to describe something like electricity, lights, they understood candles, but they didn't understand electrical systems, right? So Daniel's writing, John writes in the book of Revelation, and they're writing from that perspective, that first century or a century before Christ came on the scene. They're writing from that perspective. And so you have to understand, he's trying to explain what he sees. He sees a lion, right? Pretty sure he knows what a lion looks like, and he knows what wings are like. He certainly knows that. So he says, this one, this beast looks like a lion with wings. He says the wings were plucked off and it was stood up on 2 feet and given human nature. It talks about the Babylonian Empire and the cropping of the wings speaks of when Nebuchadnezzar was being humbled. Remember when he was being humbled in Daniel chapter 4? He had this illness called boanthropy. Boanthropy is when a person believes, it's a psychological disorder where people believe they're a cow or an ox. And he fits perfectly into that bill. And so he goes out to the field and he eats like an ox, he acts like an ox, he does weird things, right? And God deals with him, humbles him, and he comes through at the very end of, we saw that, like praising God and acknowledging God. So that's the first beast. We got to go quickly here. Second beast, verse 5. Daniel now describes the second beast. And suddenly another beast, a second like a bear. It was raised up on one side and had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. It's going to go quick today. We're going to go into a little bit more next week and the week after as we get more into the Antichrist. But I want you to understand this. We know, like some of these things, what does that mean, right? It's another beast. It's like a bear. Well, a bear is bigger than a lion. It's larger. The Medo-Persian Empire is bigger than the Babylonian. It was bigger. Wasn't as majestic, but it was bigger. And so in size, a bear is ferocious, and the Medo-Persians were known for their cruelty. Isaiah 13 tells us that. So why was the bear up on one side? What does that mean? The bear being up on one side, when you look at the Medos and the Persians, one side was stronger than the other. One side was bigger and larger. That was the Persian Empire. And these are things, like we read this, and you know, thousands of years ago, we're like, I don't really get this, right? And then they start making sense. And then it says there were three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. Do you think that means that the Medo-Persian Empire, that they really liked barbecues? You think they liked a dry rub, or right, like Memphis and Nashville, or do they like a wet rub? Anyways, it doesn't represent that, right? It represents something different. The three ribs in its mouth represents the three greatest nations that it conquered. That would be Babylon, Lydia or Turkey, and Egypt. And these three nations came together to form an alliance and come against the Medo-Persians, and they were eventually defeated. And then it says this, and they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh, and it likely refers to the length of time and the impact that they had over so many souls. About 200 years they were in reigning. That's the second beast. The third beast, going pretty quick, huh? Verse 6, Daniel describes the third beast. It says, and after this I looked, and there was another like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The bird also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. Every one of these fits the Grecian Empire. That's the third kingdom, and it's likened to a leopard. Greece overthrew the Medo-Persian Empire. The leopard is known for being cunning and swift and strong. And it says, and it had four wings on its back, like that of a bird. And so it's representing its quickness. Listen to this. The Grecian Empire, the guys listening, if you love history, I know some people absolutely love history here, so you're going to understand this. But if you didn't know this, this is good information. The Grecian Empire was led by a man named Alexander the Great. And he was fast. He conquered the Medo-Persian Empire in about 12 years. And then he proceeded, listen to this, then he proceeded to conquer the rest of the world with great speed, lightning speed. He went from Macedonia to Africa and then eastward into India in 3 years and just beat him and beat him and beat him and just kept growing bigger and bigger. Alexander the Great, by the way, Alexander the Great, when he conquered the whole world, he wept. He said, there's nothing else for me to conquer. Like this guy, that was his soul. If you can imagine a type A driven, I just want to conquer nations. If there had been another nation, he would have conquered it. And he wept. He says, really, there's no purpose left in my life. And he got drunk. And he went out in the rain. And he got pneumonia and he died. That quick. But Alexander the Great, he's that leopard, the leader of the leopards, right? And he's fast, and he just conquers everything in its path. It says the beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. You know what's ironic is that history matches up with the Bible. Can you imagine that? History matches up with the Bible. The four heads is where dominion was given to it. The Grecian Empire was divided into four parts. When Alexander was defeated at Ipsus in Phrygia in 301 B.C., his four generals divided the empire among themselves. You had Cassander took the territory of Greece and Macedonia. Lysicomus, I don't know how you say his name. He took governed Thrace and later part of Asia Minor. Seleucus ruled over Syria and in the Middle East, much of the Middle East. And then Ptolemy ruled over Egypt. If you're taking notes, write down Revelation 13, 1 and 2, because you're going to see the same picture there. That's why we're in Daniel, because we're getting ready for Revelation. We understand Daniel, we're going to have a much better understanding of Revelation. So, again, please remember, Daniel's writing all of this when Babylon was in its prime. There was absolutely no way that they would lose or be conquered. They were at the zenith of their rule. They were the strongest nation, absolutely could not be defeated. And so that's the third beast, chapter 7, verse 7. This is the fourth beast. And this is where it gets really interesting. Really, really interesting. Verse 7 says this. And after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth, and it was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. He says, I was considering, well, I'll get to verse 8 in a minute, but maybe not a minute, maybe 5. But he says that this fourth beast comes on the scene and it was dreadful. It was completely different. This is the Roman Empire, if you're taking notes. He says it's completely different. It's a beast. Do you guys notice? No animal is likened to it. He doesn't say it's like an elephant or a honey badger or... He just says it's a different beast altogether. And this one is really complex. This one is really interesting. The Roman Empire. He says, after I saw in the night visions, and behold, the fourth beast, it was terrible. It was dreadful. It was exceedingly strong. It was stronger than all of the others. It was more ruthless than all the others. That's what he's saying there. It had huge iron teeth, and it was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. The Roman Empire crushed and devastated everything in its path. They conquered, killed, sold. Anybody, if you oppose the Roman government, they sold you as a slave. They were devastating. Now, here's what is really interesting to me, which hopefully you're going to be intrigued by. This prophecy is only partially fulfilled. The Roman Empire is only partially fulfilled because there's going to be a revived Roman Empire that we've not yet seen. God's going to allow the Roman Empire, which really hasn't been conquered by anybody. It kind of fell apart, but it's not been conquered. There's not been an empire since that's taken over. The Roman Empire just kind of fell apart and they're ruined. But they never came back together, right? Humpty Dumpty, that's who it's talking about. They couldn't put it back together again. But there's been no other empire since. So the Roman Empire just kind of fell apart, and we're waiting because it's going to be coming back together. Now, here's where it gets interesting, is it very well could be the European common market, right? If you guys done any sort of study on prophecy, it's all speculation at this point because it hasn't been fulfilled. So I'm speculating, but it is interesting. I think it was in 1948, maybe 1950s, but there was 10 nations. They called themselves the Big Ten. And they said, we're the Big Ten. And it's coming out of that kind of that Roman, you know, Europe area. They've since gotten bigger, gotten smaller. They've grown and everything. But it's believed that that's kind of where it's going to be. And so God's going to allow with this European Union that there's... listen, I don't know that it's a European Union. Are you guys with me? So I'm perfectly straight with you guys. I'm saying it could be. I don't know for sure. I know that it's going to be 10 nations that are going to come together. And so it's going to be the revived Roman Empire. And so now Daniel delves deeper. We're going to end with this verse 8. But listen to this one. This is where it gets really interesting. And we'll come back and look at these a little bit more and see Christ in this next week. But in verse 8 it says, "And I was considering the horns. And there was another horn, a little horn, coming up from among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words." Now listen, I didn't want to fly through this, and I know we've been going quickly through this. I didn't want to fly through this today and finish up the chapter. I want to be able to dig in a little bit more. So I'm taking this in bites. Listen, my father-in-law took me to I haven't had a burger like this. I know, I got to talk about food. Every single Sunday, I don't think I get away from it. But he took us to a place in Waxahachie called Pops. Oh my gosh, if you get a chance, we should go there after church, have a potluck there. And I had a double burger the first time, and I said, this is so good, I got to have three patties. And they had four patties. And oh, man, I'm telling you, I am hungry right now. Don't get distracted like me, okay? But listen, so the second time we went, you know, I'm getting three patties. And if you've ever been there, listen, you burn your mouth. I mean, it's like the waiters are like, okay, is the burger ready? And it's like they put the patty on, and they sprint out to you, and they give it to you. And it's fresh, and you burn your mouth on that first bite, and you're like, man, this is hot. Well, when you have three burger patties, am I going too much into this? We're talking about the Antichrist, right, in the Bible, right? I get distracted, right, when it comes to food. That third patty was like, man, it's steaming hot, and you bite through the first, the bottom, and the top, and then you just burn your mouth, and I didn't enjoy it. It's two patties from this, unless I get challenged. It's two patties from now. But when I was eating it, I got to the middle, and despite what some people might think, my mouth isn't really that big, you know? And so, I widened my mouth to really, and I couldn't get the whole thing in my mouth. So, what's that? Pops. Pops Burger Shop, I think, is what it is. In Waxahachie. It's really a good burger. I wouldn't say that. You guys know I wouldn't say, like, you should go. But you should go, I'm telling you. So, the point in all this silly illustration, right, is this. That sometimes when you take a bite of something, you don't take the whole burger and shove it in your mouth. When it comes to prophecy, when we're talking about the Antichrist, when we're coming to these critical chapters, we're not going to take a huge, gigantic bite. We're going to take it in little pieces. We're going to make it a little more manageable. Are you guys with me? Okay, that's the point. So thank you for letting me talk about Pops. They close at 3 today. You better get in by 3 because I got there at 3:15 and it was like, you don't get anything. So Daniel's now going to dive in deeper into this fourth beast. And he says this in verse 8. He says, "I was considering the horns." I mean, listen, he's given this vision and now he's, have you ever been like captured? Like you are like, this is really interesting to me. And you just get absorbed into something. Daniel is looking at this horn and he says, there's something really unusual about this. This little horn has my attention. There's something unique. There's something different about this horn. And we know that there is absolutely something different. And that is, the little horn is the Antichrist. We're going to see this explained in several places. One of the places is Daniel chapter 9, verses 26 and 27. When we get there, he's going to elaborate a little bit on that. Revelation 13, 5 through 8. Revelation 17, 11 through 14 is going to talk about the little beast. Same characteristics are listed here. The little horn is the Antichrist, okay? That's that little bite. Enjoy it, because next week we're going to understand it a little bit more. But he says this little horn comes out from among... So now listen, if you're tying these things in, if you remember in Daniel chapter 2, he talked about the legs of iron, and then the legs of iron went into the 10 toes. Remember that? Well, from those 10, there's going to emerge 3, and from those 3, there's going to emerge 1. And so that's what he's saying here. It's just amazing to me how this is all fitting. and how we're going to see this come to pass, or hopefully we won't see this come to pass, we'll be raptured. But the Antichrist is going to uproot and gain power from these three horns. He's going to solidify his power. And it says, and there in this horn were eyes like that of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words. The Antichrist is being described here. His eyes, he's going to have insight, very keen insight, and he's going to have man's wisdom. He's going to be ruled by a man's thought, but he's going to be powered by the devil. He's going to be shrewd. He's going to be clever. He's going to have tremendous mental abilities and capabilities, and he's going to be able to solve problems. You have to see how the stage is set. I'm almost done, but listen to this. You have to see how the stage is set right now, because we're nearly in a civil war right now between Republicans and Democrats. I mean, they're just at odds, right? You don't have to pick a side. It's at odds. We can't agree on how to live our lives as a nation. We're the prime plucking for another nation to come in and destroy us if we're not going to be unified. I guarantee you that. But all of the world, we've got hunger problems, we've got water problems, we've got all these problems. The Antichrist is going to come on the scene. It's going to be like a silver platter. Like, how do we solve these things? And he's going to say, you should do this and you should do that. Have you ever been around somebody who has that type of wisdom? I know one guy, Richard Short. It just, whatever this guy says, it just kind of happens. And I'm like, man, he's on my board as a church. I ask him, what do you think about this? And he says things. I'm like, man, that's right. It's so simple. Why didn't I think of that? And there's people who had just been given wisdom. Now, he's a man of God, and he's been given godly wisdom. But this one's going to come with a satanic wisdom. He's going to have understanding that will be purposeful and powered by the devil. He's going to be shrewd. But I want you to understand this, and I so appreciate this. He's going to be a human being. If you've done any, and we talked about this on our men's study on Friday night, but if you've ever studied like the prophecy, and there's guys who get up on TBN, and you know, they'll have a whole thing on prophecy. And well, maybe was it Juan Carlos? Is that the guy? I think, right? There's a guy in Spain or something. Like, well, maybe it's this person, maybe it's that person. Listen, we should tie into when we get it. Maybe when we get into Revelation 13, we'll tie into this. I think it's 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 says, when the Spirit is gone, then he'll be revealed. But we'll get there, okay? We'll get there. But I want you to understand this. He's just a man. He's going to have supreme power. Not supreme. He's going to have power, powerful, satanic power, right? But he's just a man, and we've got God's power, and we're greater, just so you understand the contrast. And he's going to come in, and he's going to speak pompous words. This word for, this is fascinating to me. We're almost done. Gosh, this is good. This word for pompous, in the original language, it's rab-rab, maybe, right? Something like that. It means great words. It also has a connotation of that of a captain. In other words, the Antichrist is going to come on the scene, and he's going to be directing the path, the navigation of the world, single-handedly. He's going to be, and when we get to Revelation chapter 13, you're going to see this in the height of his authority. The middle point in the 7 years of tribulation, 3.5 years, he's going to sit on the throne in Jerusalem. He's going to say, I'm God, worship me. Bow down and worship me. Take the mark of the beast, and if you don't, you're going to be beheaded. You're not going to be able to buy or sell everything. When we get to the book of Revelation, we'll go into that. But I want you to understand, this is the guy we're talking about, the Antichrist, sitting on the throne, worship me, I'm God. He's going to be so spot on with his wisdom. He's going to have such counsel to give to the world that everybody will say, why wouldn't we do that? How else? We couldn't figure it out before. This guy's worthy of following. It's set up. You guys see how it's being set up? How come we can't get along? How come the Democrats and the Republicans, how come, you know, not completely, not everybody, but generally speaking, how come we have problems with water? How is it that we have such a great, you know, really, we have a great country here. How come we have food here, and other countries, they don't have anything? Why is that? And he's going to come in, and he's just going to marvel everybody. He's going to be like a captain of the world, and he's going to be guiding it along. You know, let me end with this. He's got a big mouth. This guy's got a big mouth. You know, I like to say that. The Antichrist has a big mouth, and he speaks blasphemy of God. And God will deal with him. He will. But he's going to get up, and he's going to talk like that, pompous words, blaspheming God. And it's going to be allowed for a time, not a long time, but a time. And then God's going to deal with them. So we'll come back. We'll go into more of this. We're going to talk about how Christ is going to come on the scene next week. We're going to talk more about the three horns and the little horn. And it's you guys, it's setting us up. So when you get to Revelation 13, you're going to be like, I understand, really, I do understand very well what it is that we're studying. All right, let's pray.